morning. Isaiah 36 through 39. So we have some territory we've got to cover here. Yes, definitely. Okay. All right. Isaiah chapter 36 through 39. Let me show you real quick something that happens now here in the book of Isaiah. Normally, when you study the book of Isaiah, you find that the book of Isaiah is broken up into two sections. Section 1 through 39 and section 40 through 66. And that's a legitimate division of the book of Isaiah. That definitely makes sense. There's no doubt about that and so forth. But what is very, very interesting and edifying is this section that we're in right now, section 36 through 39 of the book of Isaiah. In some ways, it's actually very, very unique in the layout of the book of Isaiah. When we went through chapters 1 through 39, and of course we took a long time to do that and so forth, but when we went through that section, it was of course major prophecies about the coming of the Messiah, and in particular focusing on the day of the Lord, the judgment that Israel and the world deserved. There was that whole section on about the woes and so forth. And then if you look over to chapter 40, verse 1, chapter 40, verse 1, look how this next section starts. Chapter 40, verse 1, it says, comfort ye, my people, saith your God. When you come to this section of the book of Isaiah, chapter 40 through 66, without question, there's a different tone as compared to the first part of the book. Because there is such a different tone between those two sections, that's why a lot of authors in the past, a lot of critics of the Bible, have said that there are actually two different Isaiahs, that the book of Isaiah wasn't written by one person, but it was written by two different people, and that Israel, they gave the name, you know, Isaiah to the author and so forth. Now, it's easy to demonstrate that that's not at all true. And, of course, the simplest way is that when the Lord Jesus Christ and His earthly ministry quoted from the book of Isaiah, He quoted from both the first section and the second section, and He attributed both and all of it to the prophet, the actual writing prophet Isaiah. So it's pretty easy to demonstrate it's not true. However, when you read the book of Isaiah and you go from chapters 1 through 39 and then chapter 40 through 66, it's a marked distinction between those two sections. The first section, clearly, it's wrath is coming, judgment's coming, day of the Lord, doom, chastisement, things like that. Not just to Israel, but to the nations of the world. But how did you just now see that chapter 40 starts? How did it just start? Comfort. Completely different tone is set now for chapter 40 going forward. Now that doesn't mean that in the second section that there is no judgment. There is. Just like in the first section, there is comfort. It's just the overriding theme in presentation of Isaiah in the two sections is clearly different. You go through that first section, and man, you're sweating by the time you get out. You're sweating because you're thanking God. You're not on the receiving end of His wrath. All right, and then when you come to chapter 40 through 66, it truly is a message of comfort. Comfort. Look at once again. Are you still there in chapter 40? Verse 1, watch verse 1. Comfort ye, my people, saith your God. Speak ye comfortably to Jerusalem. He's not been doing that so far. There's not been so much comfort so far. He says, speak ye comfortably to Jerusalem. Cry unto her, watch this, that her warfare is accomplished, that her iniquity is pardoned, for she hath received the Lord's hand double for all her sins. You see that when you enter into this section of the book of Isaiah, the real overriding theme is what lies ahead for Israel is that offer of comfort because her warfare is accomplished and her iniquities pardoned, and hence they're going to be into the kingdom. When you look at the last chapter of the book of Isaiah, chapter 66, and not just the last chapter, by the way, but a whole series in the last chapters of the book of Isaiah, they're in the kingdom and blessing, etc., things like that. All right? So once again, there's a definite distinction and demarcation between those two books. But what is also interesting, and I hope edifying this morning, is if you look over to, go back now to chapter 36. This morning we're going to talk especially about that kind of strange section, 36 through 39. It's at the end of the first section and it starts the second section. It's like, what's that all about? 36 through 39. That's what we're going to look at this morning. It's very interesting what happens here and very edifying. Now notice how it starts. Chapter 36, verse 1. Now it came to pass in the 14th year of King Hezekiah, that Sennacherib, king of Assyria, and so forth. 37, verse 1. And it came to pass when King Hezekiah, and then chapter 38 and verse 1. In those days was Hezekiah, and then chapter 39, verse 1. At that time, Merodach-Baladan, the son of Baladan, king of Babylon, sent letters and a present to Hezekiah and so forth. What's going on now? What does Isaiah do now? He goes back and points us to whose history? King Hezekiah. And this is unique to the book of Isaiah, how he does this. Prior to this, 1 through 39, it's all these prophecies about Israel and the Gentiles and the reason that judgment's coming, the day of the Lord, and things like that. And again, I'm being very broad now in terms of trying to describe this. And then chapter 40 through 66, 1 through 66, comfort my people, the kingdom's going to be set up, get them ready, the Messiah's going to show up to bring in the kingdom and things like that. And then all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, but sandwiched between that, chapter 36 through 39, he goes back to history mode instead of prophecy mode. Okay? Or does he? And that's kind of the point here. Clearly he does go back to history mode. He goes back to the days of Hezekiah. The days of Hezekiah. Now, what's a good question to ask? Why? In fact, when did his prophecy start? When did he start his prophecy? Who remembers, and how do you find out? Yeah, read the book. Well, where in the book? Where in the book? How about chapter 1, verse 1? That's kind of a real, like, big, glaring clue here. Look at chapter 1, verse 1. You know, look at this. Chapter 1, verse 1 of Isaiah. The vision of Isaiah, the son of Amoz, which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. So that's the southern kingdom, right? Judah and Jerusalem is the southern kingdom. In the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. So you can see that's when he had his public ministry and his prophecy, in the days of those four kings. And it's not that you don't have other references too, like Uzziah, like you certainly did. Remember back over in chapter number 6, he says, look at chapter 6, verse 1. Chapter 6, verse 1, it says, in the year that King Uzziah died. See, that's when he starts his ministry, the year that King Uzziah died. And he sees the Lord in His glory and impending judgment. See that? So it's not that Isaiah doesn't mention these other guys, Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, but there's an extended section, chapter 36 through 39, where he takes our attention back to the book, to the time of Hezekiah. And of course, we ask the question, why? Why is this in Isaiah's prophecy? Especially sandwiched between all these prophecies about impending judgment and wrath and purging the nation, and your Messiah is going to come and save you, and then comfort ye, the kingdom's coming. See that? Why this issue about Hezekiah? Well, that's what we want to try to look at this morning. We want to understand the significance of it. We've got 36 through 39. We have to cover this morning, okay? I don't want to do this in two sections, all right? So, first of all, therefore, look at chapter 36. I'm going to do this really fast this morning, and I just don't know any other way to do it to try to cover the amount of information we have. Chapter 36, verse 1. Now it came to pass in the 14th year of King Hezekiah that Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came up against all the defense cities of Judah and took them. Does anybody know where the parallel section, for example, you'll find the parallel sections looking at the life of Hezekiah in two other books in the Old Testament. Anybody remember where at least the first one is? 2 Kings. Where in 2 Kings? 2 Kings 18, and of course in the book of Chronicles as well. What I want to do is let's go over to 2 Kings chapter 18. 2 Kings chapter number 18. And then, of course, it's going to be 2 Chronicles 29. It would be those two sections. 2 Kings 18 and 2 Chronicles 29. You don't turn to the one in Chronicles. We just won't have the time to look at everything, okay? But watch this. This is going to be real significant here. 2 Kings 18, verse 1. Now, it came to pass in the third year of Hoshea, son of Elah, king of Israel. That's the northern kingdom. That Hezekiah, the son of Ahaz, king of Judah, began to reign. So that's where it starts, the details about Hezekiah, chapter 18 in 2 Kings. Important question here. What is the significance of what happened in chapter 17 of 2 Kings? And everybody needs to know this. You need to write this down. You need to know this. Okay? What does 2 Kings 17 record? What major event in Israel's history? The Assyrian captivity. Did Elizabeth say it? Did you just say that? How did she know that? She looked at the footnote. What'd she say? It's right there, isn't it? Listen, jot that down. Write it in your margin. Highlight it. Mark it. 2 Kings 17 is the record in the book of Kings of the Assyrian captivity of the northern kingdom. And the reason why the northern kingdom was taken off into that captivity. It is the fulfillment of the fifth course of chastisement on the northern kingdom. Not on the southern kingdom. That one's still future. That's going to be Babylonian captivity, right? But when you're in chapter 17 of 2 Kings, that is the actual written history record of the Assyrian captivity of the northern kingdom and various things related to that. We're not going to read all that, but it's important to notice that that's what just happened just before Hezekiah takes over in the southern kingdom. Just before Hezekiah takes over in the southern kingdom, he saw his northern friend, his northern family, I mean, the northern part of his nation. Of course, they had split many, many years before that after the death of Solomon. Everybody remembers that, right? He sees his brethren in the north there, totally conquered and defeated by the Assyrians. And in 2 Kings 17, it's going to tell you why the Assyrians were successful at beating the northern empire. They took Samaria. Samaria had become known as the capital of that northern kingdom, by the way. That's where the Samaritans, that's where they come from. They're actually part of Israel, all right? So keep that in mind. So when you're told in chapter 18 of 2 Kings that now Hezekiah has taken over, what's the landscape? What's the scene? What's the historical event that's going on? Sennacherib has been successful at conquering the northern kingdom, and guess who he wants next? The southern kingdom is exactly right. That's the background. That's the time that Isaiah the prophet now is going to go and record in that section there. In the book of Isaiah, he's going to take us back to the days of Hezekiah, when Sennacherib now is on the threshold of taking Judah and Jerusalem. That's what's going on now. Okay? When you're in Isaiah 36, that's where it starts, where the king of Assyria is now trying to take Judah and Jerusalem. Everybody with me? Okay, now, let's do something else here. You could put a marker in 2 Kings. I don't think we're going to have time to come back to it. And we can get most of everything else we need out of Isaiah, but perhaps do just put a marker there in Kings and then turn back to Isaiah 36. Actually do, yeah, put a marker there in Kings. I got a test question for you here, all right? Watch this. Look at 2 Kings 18. And by the way, 2 Kings 18, okay. Hezekiah, you got 2 Kings chapter 18, 2 Kings chapter 19, 2 Kings chapter 20. All those three chapters are about a record of the days of Hezekiah in the book of Kings. You get some additional details in Chronicles. We're just not going to go look at that, okay? But watch this now. Here's a test question for you. Get Isaiah 36 and 2 Kings 18, verse 9. Test question. 2 Kings 18, verse 9 says this. Everybody ready? Here we go. 2 Kings 18, 9 says this. It came to pass in the fourth year of King Hezekiah, which was the seventh year of Hoshea, son of Elah, king of Israel, that Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, came up against Samaria and besieged it. Look over to Isaiah 36. Isaiah 36, verse 1. Isaiah 36, verse 1. Now it came to pass in the 14th year of the king of Hezekiah, that Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came up against all defense cities of Judah and took them. Now is there a contradiction? Is it the fourth year or the 14th year? Okay.
Long campaign.
All right. What did Eric say? You know what? You have to pay attention to all the details. Two totally different areas. Where's the area he's coming up against in 2 Kings 18:9? Samaria. That's the northern kingdom. Where's the area in Isaiah 36, verse 1? Judah. Now, if you'll jump down, stay in 2 Kings 18, verse 13. 2 Kings 18:13. Now in the 14th year of King Hezekiah, did Sennacherib, king of Assyria, come up against all the fenced cities of Judah and took them. See that? So that's where the record that Isaiah begins to point back to where he picks up right there. Okay, so don't get tripped up. Sometimes when you read the accounts in Chronicles and Kings and some of the cross-references, the dates will be different, but if you'll just read the context, you can figure out why. That was pretty simple, actually, right there. Okay, so watch this now. So here's what happens. Sennacherib, now who is king of Assyria, has conquered the northern kingdom. He now wants the southern kingdom. So go back with me to Isaiah 36, verse 1. The king of Assyria sent Rabshakeh from Lachish. Rabshakeh is the commanding general, basically, of his army. And he sends him down to Jerusalem, to Hezekiah, with a great army. And he stood by the conduit. He's come down. I got to jump a lot of details here because we got to move on. So what happens at verse 3? Then came forth unto him Eliakim, Hilkiah's son, which was over the house, and Shebna the scribe, and Joah, Asaph's son, the recorder. Rabshakeh said unto them, say ye now to Hezekiah, thus saith the great king, the king of Assyria, what confidence is this wherein thou trustest? Basically what happens is Rabshakeh tells Hezekiah's generals and high priests, you go tell your king from my king, we're going to beat you guys, okay? That's what he tells them. And your God's not going to help, is basically what he says. For time's sake, we're going to jump a little further ahead. He basically tells them, you know what? We'll give you a little clemency here. You got to give pledges to my master. Give us all the gold, silver, and we'll delay this process a little bit. And that type of thing. And of course, Hezekiah has nothing to do with it. He's saying, we're not going to, you know, capitulate to you guys. But look at what he says at verse 8. This is again Rabshakeh, the general of the king of Assyria. Now therefore give pledges, I pray thee, to my master, the king of Assyria, and I will give thee 2,000 horses, if thou be able to, on thy part, to set riders on. How then wilt thou turn away the face of one captain of the least of my master's servants, and put thy trust on Egypt for chariots and for horsemen? And I am now come up without the Lord, and am I now come up without the Lord against this land to destroy it? The Lord said unto me, go up against this land and to destroy it. That's interesting. He claims that Jehovah God sent him to take the land. Question. Did Jehovah God send the king of Assyria to take Israel? The northern kingdom. Yes. Did the Lord God, Jehovah, send the king of Assyria to take the southern kingdom? No. See what he's done? He's overstepping his bounds. Okay? Keep reading. Then said Eliakim and Shebna and Joab unto Rabshakeh, speak, I pray thee, unto thy servants in the Syrian tongue, for we understand it, and speak not to us in the Jews' language in the ears of the people that are unwell. This guy is not speaking Assyrian, he's speaking Hebrew. Isn't that interesting? And he says, come on, speak to us. Don't talk to the people on the wall. You're going to scare them. that was his intention, by the way. Rabshakeh says, has my master sent me to thy master and to thee to speak these words? Has he not sent me to the men that sit upon the wall, that they may eat their own dung and drink their own piss with you? Then Rabshakeh stood and cried with a loud voice, and the Jews, now he just cries out to the people on the wall, and of course he's seeking to intimidate them so that they don't trust what their king told them to do. And look at verse 14. Thus saith the king, let not Hezekiah deceive you, for he shall not be able to deliver you. Neither let Hezekiah make you trust in the Lord, saying... Now, by the way, you understand, Hezekiah has been successful in getting the people to trust in Jehovah. In fact, let me back up a little bit. When you have a chance, go read the book of 2 Chronicles about the reign of Hezekiah. Hezekiah, since the days of Solomon until the days of Hezekiah, there had never been the feast of Passover like they celebrated in the days of Hezekiah. Hezekiah was one of the great reformers, the great restorers in all of Israel's history. When you read the details of what Hezekiah did, in fact, we actually should look at this one. This would be really instructive, I think. Let me just find it real quick here. Go to 2 Chronicles. Oh, let me hunt this one here real quick. Watch this. Go to 2 Chronicles 28. 2 Chronicles 28. Now, a guy named Ahaz, not Ahaz from the northern kingdom, that guy's dead and gone by this point, but a guy named Ahaz in the southern kingdom, a guy named Ahaz was king just before Hezekiah. And Ahaz in the south was absolutely wicked. Just a disaster of a human being, a disaster of a king, just totally self-centered and so forth. And there's a very interesting comment that is made about something he did in the days that he was king. It doesn't say this about any other kings before him in the south. Watch this. 2 Chronicles 28, verse 24. Watch this. And Ahaz gathered together the vessels of the house of God and cut in pieces the vessels of the house of God and, now mark that, underline that, and shut up the doors of the house of the Lord. And he made altars in every corner of Jerusalem. And in every several city of Judah, he made high places to burn incense unto other gods and provoked the anger of the Lord God of his fathers. He's the one in the days of his reign. His official policy was the extermination of Judaism out of the southern kingdom. Close the house, the doors of the house of the Lord in the days of Ahaz. Understand that? Yeah, that's okay. What somebody else is trying to do in this country with freedom and so forth. Well, Ahaz was successful in that southern kingdom in shutting the doors of the house of the Lord. That was his official policy. By the way, he didn't get too much rebellion from the nation by this point because they're pretty bad shape. All right, so that's huge. You shut the house of the doors, and what is the king of that nation saying? They're saying, Jehovah God, we don't want you, and we don't care about you. And that's what this guy does. This guy's bad news, all right? But he dies, chapter 29, verse 1. Hezekiah began to reign when he was 25 years old, and he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was da-da-da-da. Actually, that wasn't his mother's name. I just said that. Anyway, now watch what he does, verse 3. He, in the first year of his reign, in the first month, what does he do? He opened the doors of the house of the Lord and repaired them. Top priority, first thing on this guy's list is, you know what? Absolutely open those doors back up. We belong to Jehovah God. He's our God. And we're His people and we've departed from Him and we've got to come back. And he is the greatest reformer among the kings in the southern part of Israel and Judah there than any of the kings that were before him other than Solomon. Of course, Solomon went downhill just so, you know, fast once he was old and so forth. There's no other king in the southern kingdom that really, I mean, there's another king that comes close to him, Josiah by name, but that's after him. But Hezekiah is just one of the greatest reformers ever in the southern kingdom. He restores the whole Passover situation. He restores the various feasts. He does all kinds of wonderful things to bring Israel back to the southern kingdom to an understanding of the true and living God. He even invites the Jews that are still the remnant up in the north who have been left there and so forth after the Assyrian captivity. He sends letters to them and says, guys, we're going to restore Judaism. We're going to restore this back to our God. We invite you to be a part of this. Now, what most of them did, they laughed him to scorn is what they did. That's exactly what they did to in the New Testament to the Lord Jesus Christ, right, when he was going to come and heal the girl and so forth. At any rate, most of them laughed to the scorn, but some of those Jews in the northern kingdom migrated back to the southern kingdom and said, yes, you know, we want to go back and align ourselves with the true and living God. And he just a great restoration, a great revival, as a true revival, okay? Wow, too much to go over here. I want you to see something kind of interesting. I got to watch this. And I'm already off track, and I know I'm not going to get this done, so what do we do? Anyway, stay there in 2 Chronicles 29. This is just too good, okay? 2 Chronicles 29, verse 17. Now, they began on the first day of the first month to sanctify, and on the eighth day of the month came they to the porch of the Lord, so they sanctified the house of the Lord in 8 days. This thing has been an utter ruin for years, and rubbish and crud and dirt. Hey guys, they get this thing sanctified in 8 days. What's the number 8 in the Bible? A new beginning. Isn't that interesting? These guys get this thing sanctified in 8 days. You talk about dedication and movement and so forth. On the 16th day of the first month, they made an end, and then they keep moving forward with setting everything up. Look at verse 24. It says, and the priests killed them, that is the sacrifices. They made reconciliation with their blood upon the altar to make an atonement for all Israel. For the king commanded that the burnt offering and the sin offering should be made for all, not just Judah. King Hezekiah understands that, listen, God's plan and purpose encompasses the whole nation of Israel. See that? By the way, did you notice how both words reconciliation and atonement are used in that one verse? Did you notice that? Sometimes people will say your King James Bible made a bad translation in Romans chapter 12 when it says, by now whom we've received the atonement, they say it should be reconciliation. That verse helps you understand why atonement is correct in that translation at Romans chapter number 8. You can see, watch what happens at verse 24. The priests killed them, and they made reconciliation with their blood unto the altar to make an atonement for all Israel. Reconciliation looks at what? The sacrifice. Atonement looks to the people. See that? You have to have one without. You can't have one without the other. Anyway, that's another whole issue there. Look at verse 27. Hezekiah commanded to offer the burnt offering upon the altar, and when the burnt offering began, the song of the Lord began also with the trumpets and with instruments ordained by David, king of Israel. He goes back, Hezekiah goes back and he reads the book of Psalms. And he reads Kings and Samuel. And he sees how David set up this whole course of the priests and of the singers and of the trumpeters and of the porters. David set all that order up for the temple. And he goes back and restores all of that. It's incredible what happens here. Okay? And then, if you look at, look at verse 30. Verse 30 will tell you that. Moreover, Hezekiah the king and the princes commanded the Levites to sing praise unto the Lord with the words of David and of Asaph the seer. That's the book of Psalms right there. That's exactly the book of Psalms. Remember that? And so forth. Now watch what happens real quick. I'm going to jump all the way down to verse 36. There's a great restoration happening, it's incredible. Everything's getting set up. And Hezekiah rejoiced in all the people that God had prepared, the people, for the thing was done. What's the next word there? Okay, make a connection. New Testament. Do you know another event that parallels this one? Think about that very last word there. Make a connection in the New Testament. And there was suddenly a sound from heaven as of a rushing mighty wind. It filled the whole house where they were gathered. And they began to speak with tongues as Pentecost. That's what this is like. That's what this foreshadows here. The great restoration when Israel's coming together to restore what the Old Testament said. They're coming together with songs and trumpets and singing and praising. They're in one accord, and that's not a car. Right? You see that? What a tremendous picture this is up here and so forth. Anyway, let's see. Go to chapter 30. By the way, y'all, if you're reading through your Bibles, you're past this point. So you read all this, right? This should be fresh in your mind right now. Look at chapter 30, verse 26. So there was great joy in Jerusalem, for since the time of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, there was not the like in Jerusalem. Then the priests, the Levites, arose and blessed the people, and their voice was heard, and their prayer came up to His holy dwelling, even unto heaven. What a great testimony for this guy, Hezekiah. Well, again, I got way off track, but that's very helpful, I hope, anyway. Go back with me. Now, let's backtrack a little bit. Go back to the book of Isaiah 36. So anyway, Hezekiah has taught the people to have confidence in Jehovah God. That's one of the first things he did right when he takes over. So now, when Rabshakeh, who is the general of King Sennacherib, tells the people, don't you listen to Hezekiah, who's told you to trust in Jehovah God. Hezekiah's already been pretty good in instructing them to trust in Jehovah God. And of course, what happens is the people do trust in Jehovah God. Now, to try to expedite what we're trying to go through here is that Hezekiah, when he hears these blasphemous words of Rabshakeh against Jehovah God and against Jehovah's people, Hezekiah tells the high priest, you need to go get Isaiah. Go get Isaiah and tell Isaiah the predicament we're in. Hezekiah knew exactly where to go. Isn't that fascinating? So many other kings before him, especially in the north, they went to Baal worshipping prophets. See that? And Hezekiah says, you go find Isaiah, chapter 37, verse 1. I'm back in Isaiah now. I'm back in Isaiah. And it came to pass when King Hezekiah heard it, that is what Rabshakeh said against blaspheming God and God's people, that he rent his clothes and covered himself with sackcloth and went into the house of the Lord. And he sent Eliakim, who was over the household, and Shebna, the scribe, and the elders of the priests, covered with sackcloth. What's this issue of covering with sackcloth? Yeah, exactly. It's mourning. It's a recognition that God, from dust we are, to dust shalt thou return. It's just, Lord, without you, we're just dead in the ground. Okay? And this is the king, from the king on down, they're recognizing this, that they're utterly dependent on Jehovah God. And he says, and he sends them, you can see it, verse 2, unto Isaiah the prophet. See that? He knows where to go. And he's instructing the people where to go. Then said unto him, thus saith Hezekiah, this day is a day of trouble and of rebuke and of blasphemy, for the children are come to the birth, and there is not strength to bring forth. That prophetically is a picture of Israel in the tribulation period, is it not? It's the day of trouble. It's a day of rebuke. It's a day of blasphemy. It's the time of Jacob's trouble. Yes, they are being in chastisement, but the Antichrist is blaspheming against God and against Israel in that tribulation period. And the problem is that the children are come to the birth. Remember, Israel's going to be born again. Well, they come to that place where they're ready to be born, and there's no strength to bring forth. And they don't have, is it Pitocin that they give the ladies to have? There's no Pitocin out there, you know, kind of a thing, whatever it's called there. And then in verse 4, he says, it may be the Lord thy God will hear the words of Rabshakeh, whom the king of Assyria, his master, has sent to reproach the living God, which is what's happened, and will reprove the words which the Lord thy God hath heard, wherefore lift up thy prayer for the remnant that is left, and so forth. And again, I got to hurry. So what happens is Isaiah, God speaks to Isaiah and basically says, hey, don't be afraid of Sennacherib. I'm going to whoop him in no time, and so forth, which is exactly what happens. In fact, look what happens, and I know I'm leaving a lot of details out, but watch what happens in this. Stay in that same chapter. Go back. You got, please, in your own study time, go read this again. Even though you just read it, since you're reading through your Bible and you've read through Chronicles, you're in Esther now, or whatever it is, you're in Ezra now. Go back and read this section again, please. Watch this now. Watch what happens. Watch how the Lord fights for them. Chapter 37, verse 36. 37:36. This is cool. You don't want to get in the fight with an angel. What's that? Yeah, man, you do not want to get in a fight with an angel. Look at this guy. 37:36. Then the angel of the Lord went forth and smote in the camp of the Assyrians 185,000. And when they arose early in the morning, behold, they were all dead corpses. What? How many is 185,000? That's a whole lot. way big, isn't it? This one angel slays 185,000 Assyrians and the guys with him. Now, it probably helped that they couldn't see the angel and he was pretty fast, right? 185,000. Isn't that fascinating? Anyway. Is that the same? What's that? Yes. Yeah, you had the leper guys who they said, if we go back to Jerusalem, we're going to starve. If we turn ourselves over to the army, then maybe they'll take care of us. Either way, we're dead. Is that what you're talking about, those two guys? No, that's not this event here.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so now watch what happens is this. And again, I'm going to have to go kind of fast. So by the end of chapter number 37, the Assyrians have been conquered and defeated and so forth. Chapter 38, Hezekiah, this is later on in his life now. In those days, Hezekiah was sick unto death, and he's going to die. But he doesn't die. The Lord extends his life. Does anybody know how many years he extends his life? 15 years is exactly right. And you have the whole thing about the sundial and so forth. But one of the great tragedies that happens, there's actually several great tragedies, but one of the great tragedies that happens after Hezekiah is restored to health and so forth. In this section, okay, I need to back up. When Hezekiah is healed, look at Hezekiah, look at Isaiah 38, verse 9. Hezekiah 38, verse 9, all the way down to verse 22. Remember I said that Isaiah goes back and looks at the history of Hezekiah? And he does. And you can find those details that we just read over there in Kings and Chronicles. But it's interesting that this record in 38, verse 9, virtually to the end of the chapter, it's not in Chronicles or Kings. It's only in Isaiah. And watch what it is a prophecy about. Verse 9. The writing of Hezekiah, king of Judah. Next time somebody says turn to the book of Hezekiah, turn to that verse right there. Okay? All right. The writing of Hezekiah, king of Judah, when he had been sick and was recovered of his sickness. This guy was restored, healed, right? I said, in the cutting off of my days, I shall go to the gates of the grave. I am deprived of the residue of my years. I said, I shall not see the Lord, even the Lord in the land of the living. I shall behold man no more with the inhabitants of the world. He's going to die, obviously. And that's exactly what was going to happen, right? He says, mine age is departed and he is removed from me as a shepherd's tent. I have cut off like a weaver my life. He will cut me off with pining sickness from day. Jump ahead to verse 13. I reckon till morning that as a lion, so will he break all my bones from day even to night. Wilt thou make an end to me? Now, understand. He's talking about personally facing death and all that's confronting him and so forth. But you see, prophetically, Israel's going to go through the death of the tribulation period. They're going to be confronted by that. He describes that. Look at verse, jump down to verse 17. For behold, for peace I had great bitterness, but thou hast, watch this, in love to my soul delivered it from the pit of corruption, for thou hast cast all my sins behind thy back. That's the essence of that little prophecy right here. Israel's going to go, Israel is sick unto death. They're going to go through that tribulation period. They're just right there at the pit of corruption. But the Lord's going to forgive their sin and they're going to be delivered from the pit of corruption. Remember how the Lord Jesus Christ on the cross, he prays to the Father, let not the doors of the pit be shut on me. And here, Hezekiah is prophesying that same type of event for the nation. And you can see that the Father is going to, God does, he casts his sins behind his back. Verse 18, for the grave cannot praise thee, death cannot sell it. Death is an enemy, is what he's driving at. For the grave cannot praise thee, death cannot celebrate thee. They that go down into the pit cannot hope for thy truth. Once you get in that pit, and those doors, you ain't getting out again. See that? But you can see back at verse 17, he was rescued out of the pit. Verse 17, behold, for peace I had great bitterness, but thou hast in love to my soul delivered it from the pit of corruption. See that? So now look what he says at verse 19. Verse 19. The living, he shall praise thee. Okay, what did he just say here? If the guy in the pit can't praise thee, if once the door is shut on the guy in the pit and they can't get that access to the truth anymore, if the living shall praise thee, then what just happened? Resurrection is the picture here. Resurrection to new life, forgiveness of sins. Okay? What's that? It absolutely is that. When the Messiah comes back to forgive all of their sins, they're going to be restored, resurrected, to live in that kingdom here. And Hezekiah's, his writing is a prophecy. Okay? Well, anyway, keep reading that. Now, quickly, chapter 39. Give me like three more minutes here. Watch this now. Chapter 39. So now what happened? This is after Hezekiah is restored. He lives for 15 more years and two great tragedies happen. Number one, he has a son by the name of is it Manasseh?
Yeah.
Manasseh. That guy, everything his father did, bad dude. Everything his father did, he reverses it. Plunges Israel right back into the clutches of the impending fifth course of chastisement. And what's that? Bad parenting, yeah. Something happened. Well, listen. Manasseh was born during that 15-year period that was restored to life to Hezekiah. Understand that? But hold on just a second. Everybody get that. Everybody make sure you just got that. Had Hezekiah died, Manasseh never would have been born because he was born after Manasseh, after Hezekiah had been restored to health. Isn't that interesting? Second major problem, and I'm rushing for time's sake here. Second major problem that happens is this. Hezekiah, his empire is doing great. Kingdom's great. King of Babylon sends an ambassador down, sends him a present to congratulate him. Hezekiah shows him the whole kingdom, shows him everything. Isaiah says, what did the king of Babylon see? And Hezekiah said, he saw everything. He says, there's not a thing in my kingdom that he hasn't seen. And Hezekiah said, yeah, that's a problem. He now is going to come and take you guys. Isaiah now pronounces the impending Babylonian captivity. See that? So listen, why is this here in the book of Isaiah? You see why it is now? Chapters 1 through 35 of Isaiah, that first section. Day of the Lord, wrath is coming, woe upon the nations, impending judgment, but your Messiah will come and save the remnant. Second section, chapter 40 through 66, second section, comfort, the warfare's over. But right sandwiched between there, the prophet Isaiah goes to Hezekiah and says, Hezekiah's life was a prophecy. It was a picture. The Assyrian came and took the northern kingdom. He wanted to take the southern kingdom, and God said, you're not taking the southern kingdom. The reason I let you take that northern kingdom is because the northern kingdom was off into idolatry and so forth, and I'm not going to let you get the southern kingdom because of the house of David. David was a man after my own heart. David was true. I'm going to delay the wrath of that southern kingdom. A king of Assyria wants to come and take the southern kingdom. God says, no way, destroys them with that angel. But as soon as Hezekiah allows the representatives of Babylon to come and search out the land and kingdom, obviously Hezekiah got kind of lifted up with pride is what happened here, that Babylon, the representative of Babylon comes in, looks at the whole empire, and Isaiah now has to say, yep, they're coming for sure now. The Babylonians are now coming. So the reason that he goes back at a historical glimpse in the book of Isaiah, which is a prophetic picture, is that is the prophetic picture. Right there. Everybody see that? It's fascinating the way that works. Chapter 39 now. Yeah, King of Babylon's coming. You showed him all, and he wants it all, and he's going to come and get it. So you're going to have the Babylonian captivity. You're going to have the fifth course of chastisement on the southern kingdom, and it's on its way. Okay? After Hezekiah, then you have Manasseh. He does terrible. Josiah reigns after that. He does tremendous, but it's just too late by that point. And then you've got Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin, and then Zedekiah, and then they're off into the captivity. And so you come to the end of that first section. You come to the end of that first section of the book of Isaiah, and you know what? The Babylonians are on the doorstep. So that's why it's so significant that by the time you get to chapter 40, it starts off, comfort ye, my people. Say it to my people, comfort my people, because their warfare is accomplished. Their sin is pardoned. Okay? Everybody see the kind of flow there? That's pretty exciting stuff for me. Anyway, for me it is. So, all right, we've got to stop. And we'll start here in about 10 minutes or so.